Welcome to Hino's Home Show. We're glad you're with us again. This is the show that's about your biggest investment, your home, and everything around it. So that's kind of what we talk about every week. We got a great show lined up for you this week. We are brought to you by the folks at Accurate Mortgage Group. And they'll help you get into a home. If you're looking to buy a home or refinance the one you got, you can find them at accuratemtg.com, and they'll get you closed and back to life. Encyclopedia Steve is here with me, as always, keeping me company, making sure I don't talk to myself. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing good, and now I'm laughing, so that's a positive thing.
That gets pretty boring when I start talking to myself, you know? As long as I don't start answering myself, I guess, then...
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Does anybody talk back?
Yeah, if I start doing that, then, yeah, you might want to call the authorities or something. So we're getting to that time of year now where winter's approaching us. It's kind of getting cool. I love it. And there's certain things you kind of got to get ready for. You got to get your house ready so that you can survive the winter. It's not as bad here as other parts of the country. You lived in Michigan for a while there. So I'm guessing Winters were a lot more brutal.
Yes. It snowed for about 6 months out of the year, and it was cold for about 9 of them. And so I am very happy to be in Nashville where it only snows twice a year.
Yeah. Or twice a decade. I mean, it just kind of depends, you know?
Yeah. Actually, I saw an old picture online from Broadway, and it was taken back in like the 1960s or something. And there was this huge snowstorm on Christmas Eve, and everybody was like freaked out about it. So it was cool to see that vintage picture.
Yeah, I guess a lot of snow. Yeah, I like it here because the we have all four seasons, but none of them are super extreme, you know, so they're all doable to me. You know, I think I would just jump off a bridge if I lived in Michigan through one of those like 6 month long winters.
Yeah,
that would just be not good.
Yeah, it's not fun.
Having to shovel your car out of the driveway just to get to work, you know? You know?
Yeah, actually, you know, it's funny. I have a weird experience that happened to me. It was so cold when I tried to start my car that the battery was basically dead.
Oh, boy.
So I had to get someone to come from my office, drive to my house, and help jump my car because their car was already warmed up. So once I got it started, I was then driving into the office, and the temperature started about -9 degrees.
Uh-huh.
Then it went down to -12.
Oh.
And then -17. And it just kept going down to -35.
Oh.
That's how cold it was that day.
That was cold.
It was a few years ago when we had like the polar vortex, and everybody was like worried about it coming. And so, yeah, it got real cold.
Yeah. No, thank you. I'll just stay right here in Nashville.
Yeah,
thank you
very much. Not at all.
But nonetheless, it does get colder in the winter, and there's things that you should do just maintenance-wise around the house to kind of get ready for it getting cold so that things don't break. You know, I guess one of the big things, and to save money.
Yes.
One of the big things, of course, that we've talked about before is making sure that your HVAC system gets serviced before you actually, you don't want to have it break down when it is 30 below. Because at that point, you know, they're busy. They're running to emergency, and it might be a while before you get some help. That actually happened to me one year. Our heater broke down, and we woke up in the morning, and we could see our breath.
Oh, no.
It was that cold. you know, and that was here in Nashville, so that was one of those years where it did get cold, and it took a couple of days for them to come out and fix it. So that was one year that I didn't plan ahead and have it serviced, so we had to suffer through that. And my wife was pregnant at the time, so that wasn't good. So
No. Yeah. And that sounds like a situation, which this may be a good thing to have. We have one of these in our house, a space heater, like an electric space heater. So as long as the power is on, even if the heater that normally heats the house goes out, we've still got a little bit of a heat source, and you just have to bring it from room to room and kind of stay where you're at.
Yeah. So definitely go ahead and get yourself your HVAC service. Usually, you know, it's like $100, $150. Most of the time they just kind of make sure everything's working right, clean it out so that it works efficiently, and you're good to go.
Yeah. And you know, people need to start looking at some of the things related to their house, kind of like your car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't just drive your car until it breaks. Like, you change the oil, you change the air filters. Like, you just have to do some regular things to keep it running.
Right.
And so you should look at the appliances in your house kind of the same way.
Yeah. And one of the things that I didn't learn until a few years ago was, you know, we've got ceiling fans in every room of the house, and most of the time they're running. Well, they should be spinning the opposite direction in the winter than they do in the summer.
Really?
Yeah. So you want to make sure you go in and just flip the direction. It's just a little switch on the side usually, to make sure that the fans are spinning in the proper way. So in the winter, you want the air to be pushed down because in heat rises. So you don't want all the heat congregating towards the ceiling and having the floor you know, area be cold. And so by having the ceiling fans pushing the air down, it just kind of mixes all the air together and makes sure that you have an even temperature throughout the house and your HVAC system's not working as hard.
Wow.
And then in the summer, of course, the opposite. You want cold air on this congregates towards the lower area. So you want to pull it up and make sure that it gets cooled off towards the ceiling.
Wow. Interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah.
I feel like you just blew it. I feel like I've been doing this wrong the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, because when I think
most people just let them spin the same way the whole time, you know?
Yeah. When I have a fan on, like I want the air blowing at me.
Right.
So if I'm doing that in the summertime, I'm just blowing all the hot air down back to where I am. It sounds like, right?
Yeah. I mean, that works too, I guess. But I mean, you still feel the air blowing down on you even when it's spinning the other way. It's just that overall, most of it is like being pulled up so that it
circulates the air.
It's kind of like when you're in the bathtub and the water's starting to get cold and you turn on the hot water. And so now it's really hot round it down at one end. And so you just start mixing it. You swish your hand around to kind of mix it together to make it all warm. It's the same idea, but with air.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So that's definitely something you should do. And you know, one of the other things is make sure your roof is okay.
Oh, yeah. Make sure you don't have any leaks or anything like that, just because it's going to be hard to find
those. And that can be really easy to do. Just grab a pair of binoculars and so you don't have to climb up there and just kind of look it over. Make sure you don't have any really obvious spots that look like they need some attention, because you don't want to find out about that too late. Or let's say it does snow and then it's all covered up with white and you can't see the problem anymore, and you spring a leak because something's melting and now it's hard to find.
Yeah, that's not fun to deal with. So, we had to deal with a leaky roof one time, and that experience was not fun.
Because you never know, because where the water shows up is not where it's coming in.
Yeah.
And so it can be hard to find.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the other things you could do too is make sure that you're putting sealant around all of your windows and doors. So when I say sealant, like caulk, right?
Yeah.
So around your windows, around the frames, make sure that, you know, sometimes that stuff cracks, like as it gets old.
Sure.
It can get kind of brittle, and that's how you end up with cracks, and then cold air can get in. So check all of that, make sure, add some sealant. So there's other things that you can do around, like, the bottom of your doors, for example, like weather stripping.
Yeah.
You know, so that way it keeps all the cold air on one side, whether you want it in or out, depending on which side. But that way, so you don't get that cold draft coming under the doors, you know. And usually that's more like older homes where you would have to do this. A lot of newer homes are a little bit more energy efficient. But if you've got an older home, it's definitely something worth looking into.
Here's a big one. And a neighbor of mine paid the price by not doing this. And that's turning off all your exterior faucets and getting one of those little styrofoam covers that you get. You can get them at Home Depot. They're like $3, $4, something like that. Kind of looks like a little Shriner's hat. Looks a little like a little red cover that you just put over your faucet. It insulates it so that they don't freeze up in the winter and burst a pipe.
Oh, that's smart.
Because you don't want to have a burst pipe.
No, you definitely do not. You definitely do not. You know, and actually, we did have an experience with a burst pipe, and I mean, it was not fun at all, but I found out after doing some research, you know, you would think that this would be a huge problem, like up north or where it's colder.
Right.
Up there, they've actually been designing the houses and some of the systems that run through the house, like the water system and all that. They actually put in extra insulation. So that way it's protected and all the pipes stay warmer. Down in more southern areas or anywhere where it's warmer, they typically don't do that.
Yeah.
Because your house is not just automatically designed to like deal with that.
No. That's true. So aside from just the faucets, if you've got sprinklers, if you've got an irrigation system, you need to get that blown out so that there's no remaining water in the pipes so that they don't break. And then you have to get your yard dug up to get all that fixed in the spring, which is expensive and you don't want to have to do that. So most lawn care companies are equipped to do that. They have a special machine. You can't just do it with your little home compressor. You got to have something pretty powerful to blow out all the water in the whole system. And then they're empty, then they can seal it off. And in some cities, depending on where you live, you need a permit for that. So definitely you got to check with, you know, your local.
Do you have a irrigation system at your house?
I don't, no.
We don't either. And I feel like I've been told ever since I was little, like, don't buy a house that's got irrigation. You're just going to have problems. I don't actually think that's the case. I think it's just one of those things with, like, you know, doing extra maintenance and whatever.
Yeah. It depends on where you live. If you live in a warm climate, then you never have to worry about that. But
yes,
you know, if it gets a little cold now and again, like it does here, then you just be safe. You just blow it out. It's not a huge deal. And then you just got to, you know, put it back together in the spring when it's time to start watering again. But most people don't even think about their lawnmower. I mean, if you're not using it in the winter, so it's just sitting there, and a lot of times the gas can go bad.
Yes.
And then the carburetor, it'll kind of muck all that up, just the stuff that builds up in the gas. But there's a little additive you can buy, a fuel stabilizer. You can get it anywhere, Home Depot, whatever. And you just pour a little bit of that in your gas and in the gas can that you were, if you got some left over, and it stabilizes the gas and it makes it last through the winter so that it doesn't go bad.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
protect your investment in fuel.
Yeah, I actually grew up, well, we did do it with our lawnmowers too, but the reason that I even think about this is like with a boat or a jet ski.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to do the same thing where you put this fuel stabilizer in there and you turn the engine over a few times so it kind of gets throughout the entire system.
Right.
And then that way it's going to be good. So in the springtime when you're ready to pull out the boat and pull out the lawnmower and do all of that, you know, you have to run it and it's going to be real smoky for a little while.
Yeah.
And I promise you, it's actually good for the engine to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I guess one of the last things, if you're going to be running your fireplace in the wintertime, probably a good idea, if you have a chimney, get that looked at and make sure that there's no critters living in there, that there's no debris in there that could catch fire. Make sure that there's no leaks. A good chimney person will make sure that there's no leaks in the chimney itself leaking back into the house. Carbon monoxide can be a problem with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't want to fall asleep in your living room and then not wake up because of that.
Oh, God. Yeah. You know,
so definitely it's worth just having somebody give your chimney a once over before you start lighting all the fires for the winter.
Well, and Santa also has to have a way to get in.
That's true. That's true. And he's not getting any skinnier.
No, he's definitely not.
All right. Listen, let's take a quick break. Now's a good time. So we'll be back with a whole lot more of Hino's Home Show right after this. Welcome back to Hino's Home Show. We are dancing.
Getting funky with it.
I tell you what. We are brought to you by the fine folks over at Accurate Mortgage Group. You can find them at accuratemtg.com if you're looking to buy a house or refinance the one that you got. Speaking of houses that are out there, one of the things I like doing, Steve, is especially on weekends, I like going to open houses.
Me too.
Especially if they're in my neighborhood, you know, because we got like 800 something homes in our neighborhood. Oh. And it's just kind of neat to see how other houses look on the inside in my neighborhood, especially if they got like the same floor plan. You know, what did they do with their house, you know, that's different, get ideas, you know, for your own house. So I'm kind of nosy that way. I like to go check it out.
I was going to say, you are one of those nosy neighbors.
I know, right?
One of those people that realtors hate.
Hey, realtors hate, you know, it's like, oh, you live in the market to buy a house? Nope.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, we actually like to do that too. And I kind of flip back and forth. Like, I love going on realtor.com and like Zillow and all those places just to like look at different things that are available for sale. Yeah. And so I flip back and forth from like, really cheap, like rental property type stuff.
Yeah.
To then like the super expensive, I could never afford it.
Right. Just to kind of daydream a little bit. You know, yeah. What would I do with 47 bedrooms? You
know? Yeah, exactly. And, you know, funny enough, actually, just about a week or so ago, I think the highest listing price of any home in Williamson County just went on the market.
Really? How much is that?
$23 million.
Yikes.
Yes.
Wow.
It's bananas. It's like 22,000 square feet.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's a crazy world out there right now, trying to sell a $23 million house in a pandemic.
Wow. Well, yeah, a couple of the houses that I saw recently, they had just put all new flooring in, like in the whole place. And it just, and they pretty much got their asking price. And I started wondering, was it worth doing that? I mean, because that's a lot of expense to replace all that. And I wonder if they would have gotten that same asking price without having the hassle of doing all of that work and all that money to replace all the flooring.
Yeah, you know, that is a good question. I mean, in my opinion, I definitely think doing some upgrades if you're getting ready to sell your house is totally worth it.
But when I started looking into it, there's, you know, a whole bunch of different options when it comes to flooring. You can do, you know, wood, you can do tile, you can do carpet, you know, and then there's different grades in all of those things. So if you're just looking to spruce it up to sell it, which is the most cost-effective way to go to get your bang for your buck, you know, because you don't want to over-improve the house, right? You don't want to put gold-plated flooring down for like $1 million if your house is worth in the neighborhood of $200,000.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to get, you're not going to make that money back. You're not going to push the price up of that house over $1 million in a neighborhood where they're all in the $200,000 range.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And same, you know, same thing works on the other spectrum too. Like if you're going to sell something that's $1 million or $2 million,
or $23 million,
you've got to have a certain level of, you know, niceties, like the amenities and the fixtures have to be up to a certain quality.
Right, right.
You know, you can't put something, some the really cheapest, cheap thing.
Yeah, the cheapest faucet you can find at Home Depot, you know, in the kitchen.
Yeah.
On a $23 million house.
Right. Like, that's going to work great for your rental property because a renter's going to come in and, yeah, it looks fine. Like, I'm okay with that.
But it works, yeah.
Yeah, someone's not going to pay $23 million for some Home Depot faucets.
So, I mean, obviously wood, I think, the wood flooring, that's going to be the most expensive, or not the most expensive, but it's up there.
Yeah.
Because there's different types of wood. Obviously, there's like full-on actual hardwood that is wood all the way through, and then there's laminate where it's just wood on the top layer and everything else is engineered. In the end, it looks the same going in.
Yeah.
But, you know, some people prefer one or the other. You know, and we've done another show on that, so you could look that up on the podcast at highnosehomeshow.com and listen to that. But as far as like getting your money back, I don't know that hardwoods is the way to go. Or maybe it is. I mean, when I looked it up, it's about, what, $5 to $10 per square foot plus another $4 to $8 to have it installed. So, you know, you're looking at, you know, somewhere between $14 and $18 a foot installed. And if you've got a big house, that can add up real quick.
Yes, it can. But the nice thing about wood is, especially in like Middle Tennessee, hardwood or hardwood looking, I guess, the image of hardwood is something that's very popular with buyers. So even with some of these other options that we're going to talk about, really hardwood is a good safe bet. You know, yeah. You're not going to get a lot of people who come in and say, oh, look at this hardwood. Like, it's awful. I really wanted carpet. Like, a lot of people don't say that.
Most people don't. Oh, I wish it was carpet. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, from a return on investment standpoint, I think wood, from what I've researched, about 70 to 80%. You get your money back. So you get whatever you spend. Let's say it costs you $1,000, you know, to put hardwood floors in. But just for sake of example, you might recoup about 70 to 80% of that in value from your home sale.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's not bad.
Yeah, no, that's not bad at all. And I will say too, with the wood, because we did, we actually did this in our previous house. We went through and tried to figure out, should we do actual hardwood floors? Should we do laminate, or should we do, there's also engineered wood,
right?
Which ultimately is the one that we ended up going with. We didn't do actual hardwood because we have dogs, and dogs scratch up real hardwood
floors.
They do. So that can be a real problem. So even though there's this idea that actual hardwood floors are like a huge thing to cherish, in older homes where you can restore them, I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
But if you've just got, you know, regular slab floor in your house, it's probably worth actually going with a non-hardwood option and doing like either laminate or engineered wood, because a lot of buyers in Middle Tennessee have pets or have animals, and so they don't want to see your dog scratches on the floor, and they don't want to see their own dog scratches on the floor after they move in.
Well, that is true. So on the other end of the spectrum, like the least cost effective, I think, ends up being carpet. Carpet, you know, it's about what, between $4 and $7 a square foot installed, but the return on investment is only like 25 to 40%.
Yeah.
There's so many, you know, there's builder grade carpet and then there's more expensive carpet. And the builder grade stuff looks good for the sale and it doesn't look good very long.
Yeah.
It doesn't wear well.
Right.
Especially on stairs. It starts to look bad pretty quick.
Yeah. And it's usually not very, I don't want to say not nice carpet, but
it doesn't feel good on bare feet.
Yes.
You know, whereas some of the more expensive stuff, it does look really nice. We carpeted a room at my last house and we kind of bit the bullet and got the upgraded carpet, and it lasted a long time. So yeah, it was more expensive, but you know, 10 years later, it still looked pretty good, you know, and it cleaned easily, and it was just kind of tougher, kind of like what they would put in a hotel. I mean, it didn't look like that. It's the garish pattern and everything, but like the type of stuff that they would put in a hotel lobby or hallway is a lot more durable because it gets beat up.
You know,
and they don't want to be ripping it out every year.
You know, speaking of that, have you seen the new carpet that is going into B&A, the airport?
No.
It's awful.
It's what does so it look awful. Like?
It's so, you know, if you've been to the airport, I guess before the pandemic, it was kind of brown and cream colors, and you know, it felt kind of warm, like kind of like that feeling, yeah. Right? The new carpet is black and silver and green, like what? Lime green. Yeah.
Okay.
It looks base age, and I mean, it's just it's bad. I don't like it. A lot of people wow. don't like it, so it's not just me.
Well, then there's tile. Tile can be cost effective. There's, you know, ceramic tile, there's porcelain tile. Ceramic's going to be less expensive. Return on investment on that is going to be about 70% as well because it's so cheap to put in. And porcelain tile is going to be a lot less so, about 55%. But I don't know how many people like having tile other than in the kitchen or the bathrooms, like in the rest of the house. It's kind of cold.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like Florida where you go to houses in Florida and, you know, the entire downstairs is all tile. We just don't see that here a lot in Middle Tennessee.
No, you don't. And I've been to a couple open houses and they had that tile in the whole house. And I, you know, the first thought that I had is like, oh, that's, yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of that either.
You can make it so that your tiles are heated in the bathroom. I don't know if it would be cost effective to do that in the whole house. You know, flip a switch and all of a sudden all your tile starts glowing in front of the fireplace.
Wow. Honestly, that sounds great. Heated flooring in the bathroom? I never even thought of that.
Yeah.
I need to step my tile game up, I know.
Yeah. Well, you got to put it in when you're installing it because it's basically a mesh mat that has a heating element in it. That gets put down on the floor and then the tile goes on top of that. So it all has to be wired in, of course, to a switch and everything. Okay. So it's not something you can really put in after the fact unless you're willing to rip up the tile and start over. Wow. But once it's in, it's actually pretty cool. You flip a switch and then the tile gets warm and so you're not having to. And so I've known one guy who puts it on a timer so that, like a smart timer, so that it heats up before he wakes up in the morning. So by the time he gets up and goes into the bathroom, it's nice and toasty.
Wow. I like that.
That's I know, really cool. Right? I bet you that $23 million house has that.
It probably does.
Yeah.
You know, one thing, I'm a big fan of, you know, like heated things like heated seats in cars or, you know, heated flooring sounds
coffee.
Really cool.
I've never I like heated coffee.
Yes, absolutely. But you know what is the one thing that is a trend that I'm starting to see that I don't actually agree with yet, maybe because I don't have one, I haven't experienced it,
yeah.
Is heated toilet seats.
Okay.
That has become a trend. You know, for some reason, there's all this like crazy design going on with toilets and now they hang off the wall instead of sitting on the floor and wow. You know, you can push a button to put the seat up or down. I mean, like all kinds of crazy stuff. But one of them is having a heated seat. And I mean, when I think of a heated toilet seat, I think somebody's been using it, you know?
Yeah. So it does not put a good image in your head.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I see where you're going with this. That mind of yours, that's a very interesting place.
You don't want to be there for too long.
No. Well, actually, just to kind of wrap this up, the least cost-effective one that I found is marble tile. That's the least because it's super expensive. Return on investment is less than 50%. And marble tile tends to not be everybody's cup of tea. You know, there's a certain look to it. So, yeah, it's expensive, and it kind of has that classy look, but it's very cold. It's actually not very durable. It breaks easily.
It's porous also.
And it's porous, yeah, so you got to seal it all the time. So I think a lot of people might be scared off by that if they went into a house and saw that the whole downstairs was, you know, tiled in marble. So if you're looking to sell your house, probably that's not a go-to to like retile the whole house with marble before you put it on the market.
Yeah.
You're not going to get your money back out of it. I don't think. Well, listen, let's take a break so we can recuperate from thinking about that. We'll be back in a few minutes here on the Hynos Home Show. So come on back. Welcome back to Hynos Home Show. I love that old song. That's a song called Fannie Mae by a guy named Buster Brown. Mm. You don't find many, many mortgage titled songs. Anyway, we are brought to you by speaking of mortgages, we're brought to you by the fine folks over at Accurate Mortgage Group. If you're looking to buy a house or refinance a house, please give them a call. You can find their number and everything you need to know at accuratemtg.com or even at hynoshomeshow.com. Steve, we've been talking about it being fall and you know, it's that time of year, but you know what else, what time of year it is this year or every year?
Uh-oh, tell me.
It's property tax time.
No.
It is. The property tax bills are coming out, and we got to all pay them like October, November, December, right in that time frame.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people don't really understand how they even come up with what they charge you for property taxes. You know, I don't think most people probably even put a whole lot of thought into it. It's just, all right, this is what they are. We got to pay them.
Yeah.
But there is actually a kind of a method to their madness, how they come up with that tax bill that you have. Have you ever looked into that?
I have for new construction properties, and that's a whole different animal than, you know, your typical tax bill. And I guess I probably should be a little bit more informed about this as a homeowner.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it is still kind of complicated. Like, as somebody who does understand how it works, I still feel like it's a little bit complicated. But what's your stance on that?
Well, I mean, I don't have a problem paying them for the most part, because I know it goes for things that we use. I mean, most of the time, property taxes in general, they're used to, you know, fund local projects or you know, police and fire departments, if your town has their own police and fire department, and just the local facilities, parks, recreation, schools, education, all that sort of thing. So, I mean, that's all kind of stuff worth paying for.
Yeah, I agree on that.
Like anybody else, I hate to see that type of money wasted. That's part of why you vote. Hopefully you vote for people that like use that money wisely and spend it for the public good and all. So, you know, so you got to wonder, you know, we're lucky that we live in an area where the property taxes aren't too outrageous. I think we've talked about on other shows where property taxes in other states are crazy high.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things I am definitely thankful for is how low our property taxes are compared to other similar areas in different states.
Yeah, I mean, very much so. I've seen and talked to people who their mortgage payment on their house was like in the $900 range, but the property tax, their escrow part of their payment every month was like $1,000.
Wow.
So their money that was being collected for property taxes was more than their house payment. Yikes.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, and that's, luckily we're not in that boat here, and hopefully it'll stay that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? But when they, you know, one of the things that we encounter a lot is, you know, when we're doing mortgages, one of the questions that comes up is, you know, what's your house worth? Or the house that you're buying, what do you think it's worth? And a lot of times people will say, well, I looked at my tax bill and it's going to be worth right about this much. Let's just say $300,000. Usually the house is worth a lot more than what it says on your tax bill, because they don't go by market value around here. So if your house is worth, you know, which is good, because if your house is actually worth, like, you know, let's just say $500,000 and your tax bill says it's worth $300,000, I'd much rather be paying taxes on the $300,000 than on the $500,000.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. There's actually, we should try and find this and post it on the website. There's an image out there, or a meme, from like years and years and years ago. And it's like a picture of three different houses, and like one of them, the house is basically fallen down, and it's like, this is what I want the tax guy to see.
Right.
It's like a really nice house, and it's like, this is what I want the mortgage company to see. And it just kind of goes on like that.
Yeah.
You know,
and then here's what I actually want to live in.
Yeah.
That $23 million house that we were talking about in the last segment. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. So the appraised, how does the appraised value then work around here when they appraise a property? First of all, it's the county assessor that does that, right? So if you wanted to find out more about that, if you just go to your county's website and you look up the county assessor, they'll have a bunch of information in there about, you know, how you pay your tax bill, how it's calculated, and that kind of thing. But how do they assess it around here?
When it comes to the appraised value, every few years, the assessor is going to do a really in-depth dive of what homes are worth.
In the whole area.
And so they're going to look at different values and try and get a realistic determination of what the appraised value is going to be.
Okay.
So what you'll see is, usually it's about every 3 years. Every 3 years, your tax bill is going to be the same couple years in a row, and then there's going to be an adjustment.
Right.
And so that adjustment is when the assessor goes in and does like this really deep dive to figure out what homes are worth.
Right.
So,
and then they use a certain ratio of that, right, of that appraised value to come up with the tax bill.
Right. So that's called the assessment ratio. So depending on what type of property it is, there's a couple of different things they can do. So if you've got like residential or farm, different types of land like that, where it's more used for personal use, your assessment ratio is only going to be 25% of what your appraised value is.
Okay.
Now, when it comes to something like commercial or industrial, it's actually higher than that. It's about 40%.
Oh, okay. So definitely higher.
Yeah. So that ratio is then going to be multiplied out, or the result of that ratio is then going to be multiplied out based on the millage rate or the tax rate.
Okay.
So the millage rate or tax rate, we'll just kind of use those terms interchangeably. It's set by the different county commissioners and the different people involved in various parts of government. So depending on what county you live in, like Davidson County is a little bit more complicated because they've got the urban services district and then they've got the general services district. So the difference between the urban services and the general services district, the general services covers the entire county, right? So if you live, you know, out in Bellevue, like right in the southwest tip of Davidson County in the Bellevue area, you're going to fall under that general services district. The urban services district really covers more of like Green Hills, Sylvan Park, the West End, downtown obviously is going to be part of that. And it's because there's a more dense population, there's more things going on right in that general area. There's an additional overlay on top of the general services millage rate that you have to pay that's called the urban services.
Wow.
Right. So if you live closer to downtown, your tax rate is actually going to be a little bit higher than if you live in the outskirts of Davidson County.
Ouch. Okay.
Right. Now that, again, that's only because there is such a big city in Davidson County that Davidson County operates that way. All the other places generally don't do that.
Okay. Okay. So then the tax rate that they end up coming up with, that's set by the county commission, and they basically take the assessed value, multiply it by the ratio to come up with your tax rate. So whatever the house, they figure your house is worth. And that's always not necessarily what the house is worth, like on the open market, which is why when you look at your tax bill, it says your house is worth one thing. But in reality, if you go to Zillow or anything like that, it's going to say it's more. But different parts of the country, they actually go off the market value, which is partly accounts for why their property taxes are much, much higher.
So I mentioned earlier that with new construction, it's a little bit different than just purchasing a home that's already been lived in, right?
Right, right.
So what happens with new construction that's different is the initial tax that gets collected, like when we are helping you purchase a home, let's say if you're buying a new construction,
yeah,
we have to go based off what your purchase price is and then use this same calculation to determine what your taxes are going to be that we're going to collect. Now, the reason for that is because we don't know what the assessor is actually going to appraise the home at.
Right, because they're all brand new and they haven't gotten around to it yet.
Exactly. So when you're purchasing a new construction home, you're going to have your taxes calculated based off what your purchase price is. What will end up happening once the home gets assessed by the assessor or gets appraised by the assessor, they're going to determine what their appraised value is of your property based on that area. So
do they usually go down at that point?
They do, actually, yeah. And I couldn't tell you the reason for that, because you would think they have a registered sale and here's what it's worth, but maybe they just think people are overpaying for houses. I'm not really sure.
Okay.
But yeah, they usually do come down. So what that means for you, if you're going to buy a new construction house, is we are going to collect higher taxes. And then once the tax bill comes out, the servicer, the mortgage servicer, is going to do an escrow analysis and they're going to say, okay, well, we're collecting, you know, X amount of dollars for your tax bill and your tax bill only ended up being this much. So we're going to lower your payment and then we're going to give you a refund for that difference.
Nice.
So you may get a little bit of money back.
Everybody likes a refund.
Absolutely.
So do all municipalities use property tax revenue for the same type of stuff?
I would say, generally speaking, yes. I mean, certain areas are going to have different needs. So like if you look at, you know, somewhere like New York, for example, well, they have to deal with snow removal. That's not something we deal with in Nashville. You know, if it snows, everything just shuts down for a couple of days.
Right.
Up north where it snows a lot, they have to pay for the plow trucks. They have to pay for salt. They have to pay for the employees to deal with it. So there's, you know, depending on different geographic areas, there can be some variances as to what your taxes are used for. But generally speaking, it is used for covering services like you mentioned with, you know, the police, fire, education, different local government funding comes from some of that, in addition to like the sales tax and things like that. So,
yeah, and I've noticed that different parts of the areas around here, when it does snow, some areas are quicker to respond to have the roads plowed and salted and that kind of thing. It's kind of obvious, you know, like I lived in Brentwood for a lot of years and, you know, it snowed and man, they were out there right away and the roads were cleared right away. And you just crossed over the county line into the next county and it's all covered in snow for like a few days before they got around to it. Well, I guess we should go ahead and take a break. All this tax talk is giving me a headache. I'm gonna have to take a quick break, but we'll be back on Hino's Home Show in just a few minutes. All right, welcome back to Hino's Home Show. We are brought to you by the fine folks over at Accurate Mortgage Group. If you are looking to buy a house, refinance a house, you know who to call. Accurate Mortgage Group. You can find them at accuratemtg.com. You can also find them at hinoshomeshow.com. And, you know, speaking of refinancing your house, that's something that still a lot of people are doing. Rates are still great. And a lot of people are still taking advantage of that. But in the last month or two, it has become a little bit more expensive because of a fee that the Federal Housing Finance Administration has imposed on all refinances of conventional refinances across the board in the country. So all mortgage companies. So, you know, this applies to everybody.
Yeah, I will tell you, too, that we fought this thing tooth and nail.
Oh, yeah, and still fighting it. Still fighting it, but we lost that battle.
Yeah.
So it's unfortunately a part of reality right now.
Yeah.
It's 0.5, so 50 basis points, I believe, is what it is.
Yes.
Added to every loan. And they call it an adverse market fee.
Yes. And for people who don't know, like, 50 basis points, we're not talking about, like, 0.5% of your rate.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you were going to get 3%. Now you're going to get 3.5. It's actually based on individual pricing for each individual rate. So, you know, if the rate was 3% yesterday and well, not exactly yesterday, but before this fee, if it was 3%, now with the fee, you would have to pay 0.5 to get 3%.
Right.
So
definitely just got a little bit more expensive. Now, they did delay it for a little while because it was supposed to start in August.
Yes. It was supposed to start early, and then they push it back, I think, to like December,
December
right?
1st, yeah. But the thing that I think a lot of people don't realize who maybe have been reading about it and aren't up on it or been following it is they think that the fee's not being charged until December 1st, but that's not the case. That date is based on the date that the loan eventually gets delivered to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac because, you know, most mortgage companies sell the loan the loans that they do on the secondary market. And in that way, they recoup their money and are able to do more loans. Otherwise, you know, eventually you'd run out of money. You'd be out of business.
Right.
So that whole process takes about 30, 45 days from the time that a loan is finished to the time it ends up with Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. So based on that, December for any loans that are being done right now will be delivered to them way past December 1st. So in other words, that fee is being charged now.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately. I mean, that is, you know, that was one of the things when they first brought this out, there was a lot of confusion over that.
And, yeah.
You know, for you use the term adverse market fee, which is what they call it. And I think is a good description. The whole reason that this is being charged is due to the coronavirus.
Awesome.
Yeah, of course. Everything is about COVID.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the reason, I mean, really the reasoning behind it, which we've talked about in the show in the past, a lot of rates are dictated based on risk or perceived risk.
Right.
And so with COVID, you know, and having to do the economy shut down and all of that kind of stuff, it presented a lot of unknown risk factors. We had never really been in this situation where all of a sudden the economy was just shut down.
Right. You don't know if the borrower that you're giving a loan to is going to have a job next month.
Right.
Because there's so many variables.
Yeah. And so our hope, and one of the things, of course, that we're fighting against is to make this a temporary thing. You know, we would like to see this fee go away eventually.
Absolutely. Yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. We would like to have never started it.
Exactly. Exactly.
And one of the interesting things too, that, you know, is kind of some market data for people who are interested. The amount of like foreclosures and defaulted payments that we were expecting was actually a lot less. What we are seeing is a lot less than what was expected.
Right. They were expecting full-blown, like, major defaults on mortgages and everything, and that didn't really materialize.
Right.
Which is good.
Right. Absolutely. So as we see more people come out of, you know, the payment deferment program and things get worked out with that, our hope is that eventually this is going to go away. But for right now, it's here and we're still fighting it. But for right now, it's a thing we got
to
deal with.
Now, it's not really applying to government loans like FHA, USDA, VA loans, right?
Right.
Those ones are exempt. It's really just applying to standard conventional Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac loans.
Right.
Although other loans do have their own fees that they charge. You know, FHA has, what, a 1.75% fee that they charge just for the privilege of doing an FHA loan.
Right, right, exactly.
and that gets sent directly to FHA, so it's not something your mortgage company gets to keep.
Yeah.
And USDA loans, which we do a fair amount of those around here, that's a lot less. That's only a 1% fee. And then they charge an annual 0.35% fee for the privilege, again, of doing a USDA loan. So, you know, you're going to be paying these government fees no matter what, you know? So
right, right, you know, absolutely.
And that's you know, so 0.35 then divided by 12. So that's what ends up in your monthly payment every month. So it's actually relatively small, but it adds up.
Yeah, so the best way to look at this adverse market fee is kind of like what you were just saying with these different loan types. You know, all of this is really about managing risk. Like, home ownership is something that we are firm believers in America. You know,
sure.
Everybody wants to own a home. It's a great investment.
Yeah.
If you're lucky, I guess it's not always a great investment, but for the majority of people, it has turned out positively. And there's different things that we have to do as an industry to make sure that the industry doesn't implode again. You know, because we ran through that issue in 08, 09, where people were getting loans when they shouldn't have, and the pendulum has swung the other direction. And part of the way that they deal with protecting against any sort of, you know, huge issue like this is through these adverse market fees, is through mortgage insurance premiums. You know, it's all done in such a way so that everybody pays a little bit extra. So when somebody else screws up really bad, it doesn't implode the entire industry
right.
for everybody.
It's always that one guy, right? There's one in every crowd. It ruins it for everybody, you know?
Right, right.
So we could all have lower mortgage payments if it weren't for that, you know, those few people. So, but that's the way life goes, right? I mean,
yeah.
that's the way it goes.
Well, it is true. But the other thing to look at it too, because, you know, in my opinion, it's not really all bad. Part of the reason that we're able to get rates as low as we are is because of the stability in the market. You know, so we've talked about this again in the past, where if we know what to expect and we can see that people are going to continue to make their mortgage payments and that these are good investments, the yield on that investment, so essentially your interest rate, which is a yield for an investor, those yields go lower the safer it is. And so having these insurance policies and these adverse fees do actually do a service for people, because it lowers ultimately it lowers what interest rates are in the long term.
Yeah. So how likely do you think it is that the fee will actually go away?
I'm optimistic, but you know, once you give someone something or you start collecting a fee, it's hard to pull that back.
That's what I think about, because I can think of in my lifetime several times when some government has done a temporary tax for something or another, you know. Oh, like when I lived in California, oh, this last earthquake we had was particularly devastating, so we're going to have a temporary sales tax increase to help pay for that. Well, it never went away.
I know.
It never went away.
Right.
And so, you know, and typically whenever the government says they're going to do a temporary tax of any kind, I just doubt that it ever goes away. So that's the pessimist in me is like, oh, dang, we're stuck with this forever.
Yeah.
And I really hope that's not true.
I hope it's not true, too. And, you know, it's kind of like with all the property tax stuff going on in Davidson County. Like, I think it was 2017, so the bill must have gotten passed in 2016.
Right.
Home values had gone up so much that taxes went up accordingly.
Sure.
Because, you know, the millage rates never changed. So they did actually lower what the millage rates were in Davidson County.
Wow.
And that was a very positive thing for a lot of people. And I know for myself, for example, we moved from Williamson County to Davidson County after that change in property taxes had occurred, because we now looked at it as, okay, the taxes are somewhat comparable to what they are in the surrounding counties.
So if people wanted to weigh in on this, you know, because, you know, the Mortgage Bankers Association, that's a trade group that represents the mortgage industry, they are lobbying and they've been fighting very hard to get this thing reversed or just canceled. The best they were able to do was to get it postponed for a little while.
Right.
So, but it's still there. So if people wanted to weigh in themselves, who do they contact? Do they contact their senators and congressmen? Is that the best way to go?
So you can go that route, and I certainly encourage people, regardless of what your political affiliation is, get to know your representatives.
Yeah.
You know, if it's state representative, federal representative, whoever it is, get to know these people, like they work for you. On top of that, though, like you mentioned with the Mortgage Bankers Association, there are some different industry groups that have petitions online. So like if you go, you know, just Google mortgage adverse market fee or even like increased mortgage fees or something, like it's a hot topic right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, it'll
so
come,
it's
up.
Gonna come up.
It'll
yeah.
be the first hit.
So if you sign up for some of these petitions just to show your support to get rid of this adverse market fee, that's going to have a lot of effect because there's power in numbers.
Yeah.
You know, so one person complaining to a representative, well, okay, that's just one guy. But when you get a bunch of people together and do a petition like that, it really can speak volumes to how people feel about it.
Well, I certainly hope that we can get it reversed because, you know, over the long term on your mortgage, that can add tens of thousands of dollars to what you end up paying in interest because you ended up having to get a higher rate because of that fee.
Right.
You know, so.
Right. Absolutely.
So it has a direct impact on everybody.
Yeah. And, you know, truth be told, though, I don't agree with the fee because I'm afraid it's going to stick around for a long time. Right.
Right.
So I do get why it was an important step that they wanted to make to create some stability in the market. I get it. But I think there needs to be like a time limit on it. You know, this isn't something that we should just keep around forever. Like if we can at least get a time limit on it, that's going to ensure that it's going to go away eventually. And once we get out of this and things kind of go back to normal, then, you know, let's go back to the way it was before because we no longer have this adverse thing happening for us.
I totally get it. Well, listen, well, if you have any questions about that or anything else mortgage related, give us a shout at heinoshomeshow.com. We'd love to answer your questions. And if you have any topic ideas of anything you'd like us to talk about or hit on, we'd love to hear about that too. So till we meet again, thanks for listening to Heino's Home Show.
Accurate Mortgage Group, a division of Acopia LLC, is an equal housing lender, NMLS 4664, and a Moeller, NMLS 1666140.